You are listening to The Big Interview, first broadcast on the 15th of November, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Hello, I'm Tom Edwards, and this is The Big Interview on Monocle 24, our one-on-one show where people with fascinating lives, enviable careers, and plenty of great tales sit down and tell us how they got to where they are today, what inspires them, and what makes them tick. My guest today is the man behind his eponymous graphic design studio here in Munich, founded in 2007. Perhaps best known for content-driven creative for the likes of Die Zeit, where he's creative director, and Bavarian State Opera, among many others, Mirko Borscher is unquestionably one of the most exciting and dynamic editorial designers at work today, whether in newspapers, magazines, the arts, music, or in business. He has a unique creative voice, and he's speaking to us in it today here on Monocle 24. Mirko Borscher, welcome to The Big Interview.
Hello, thank you.
Let me just start by, I guess, setting the scene. We're here in Munich. I was expecting a wintry day.
Yeah.
Actually, it's beautiful sunshine, which let's hope is appropriate. So many great projects here. Your bureau, as I mentioned, is based here. What's the state of the nation, though, in Germany when it comes to design at the moment? What's the discourse like as a practitioner in this field? Do you feel like, you know, the country's in a good place? Are you happy with the sort of the state of the nation?
I think it really went better because when I started studying graphic design, the only place we could study graphic design was Amsterdam or London, if it was in Europe. So I went to London, obviously. And now it totally changed. I think there's some universities coming up in Germany which are quite good. And you see like a lot of small graphic design bureaus which really improve their work, which are really like doing really nice stuff. And I think it's also like depending, because the advertising scene in Germany went down a little bit. All the talents, the young people, they don't want to go advertising anymore. They want to publisher, they want to have a product in their hand, and they don't want to do like these advertising 360 campaigns, viral things, and things you can't really move around. Or I mean, like for graphic designers, haptic things are still very important, and I think for German, anyways, because we are still, if it comes to printing, I think we still have a lot of magazines, and some of them are quite successful, still successful on the market. I mean, if you see how it developed worldwide, it's different, you know, because mostly the sales of the magazines went down. So, I mean, I think it's good.
It sounds like a good picture. And what about where within Germany we should look? You know, is it in the centre? As I say, we're here in Bavaria. Is there a new generation? Do we need to look maybe to other cities? Are there emerging places where it's more dynamic, you know? Or do you think that the big centres still have plenty to offer the kinds of young talents you're talking about?
I mean, there's some smaller studios in smaller cities. But basically, most of the designers are based in Hamburg, maybe Leipzig, Berlin and Munich, Nuremberg, Stuttgart, like the biggest cities in Germany. And if it comes to Munich, I mean, I'm quite lucky with the place, because normally if I go to New York or go to another place, and often people know my work there, but they all think I'm from Berlin. Like every creative comes in Germany comes from Berlin. But if you really look inside of Munich, it's like we have here Konstantin Gritschitsch, which is a fantastic industrial designer. Stefan Dietz, which is a really fantastic industrial designer too. Clemens Weishaar, Steffen Kerle, and the list is quite long. So if it comes to industrial design, it's like top-notch, I think, in Munich. If it comes to graphic design, it's good too. We have like some really good graphic designers here. We have not very much fashion designers, but we have a few like Isid Bostan, which does really nice work here. So I think the difference to a bigger city like Berlin is that we are all hooked up in a way. We're all talking to each other. We all like each other. And so nobody's envy about the other one. Everybody tries to encourage the other one, helps the other one if it comes to projects. Sometimes we collaborate, but nobody really, I mean, it's like even if I'm a friend with one of the mentioned people and they have a really big project, I mean, I wouldn't wait them to ask me to work together with them, but I would help them anyways.
Mm.
You know? So I think that's a difference.
So it's a genuinely kind of collaborative approach.
Somehow,
that's nice.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll talk in a bit more detail about some of your most celebrated projects a bit later, and many of them are in print, of course. When it comes to the news media, looking at newspapers in particular, do you think there's a conversation to be had about what the German language press can teach the English language press? I often find that certainly in the UK and in, well, anywhere in the English speaking world, we often look to the German news media as something of an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Is that, you're obviously right in the heart of it here in Munich. Do you feel that way? Do you think there are lessons that the rest of us should be learning?
Yeah, I mean, we as Germans, I think we don't think that far because nobody speaks our language. So that's something new for me, that other people look in our country, because nobody really does understand what you're writing here. So you don't really get the content or like what we really say in our newspapers. So for us, we always look in the international press, of course, and get all our influences from The Guardian, like from London, of course, from England, from France, from America. But it's interesting that other people look at us. I mean, there are like some collaborations with the New York Times magazine and some other smaller magazines or bigger magazines, which ask us for little stories or collaborations with photographers here in Germany. I mean, good to know that somebody sees it.
That's definitely what people think. Oh, I just wonder, in terms of how, I don't know, how bold editorially some of the ideas are and the executions. Mm-hmm. I think that's often what people looking from the outside think. It's maybe a bit bolder. Do you think that there, editorially, there's a bit more bravery in some of the German titles, and maybe commercially a bit braver as well with some of the decision making?
Yeah, it really depends on the publisher house. So there's some publisher houses which are like chickens, or that they don't really shit here in Germany. But there's some really good publisher houses in here, which are still run by not just by people counting money and looking like all these marketing procedures, which still think they want to have a really good, like a good project, a good magazine, a good newspaper with nice and maybe edgy content, because they want to say something. And it's nice to work with these people because they really encourage you in having good ideas.
Well, can I ask you a bit about that? Because you're well known for having a, I don't know how to say it, but quite a contemporary kind of visual language in the work that you do. But you have a number of big clients, whether they're newspapers or, you know, the state opera here in Bavaria, that are maybe perceived to be more traditional, rather classic almost. Is that an interesting intersection for you to work? You know, at a place where it's very contemporary and at once very classic.
Yeah, I think it is very interesting for me because if you see just the contemporary stuff, I mean, if you have like sportswear clients or fashion clients, which are super contemporary, it's obvious that you have to do something edgy, something like new in a way, but mostly it's not new at all. Mostly these brands have like the latest ideas, like they steal something from other designers, mostly from students, or they look around. But if you come to clients like Die Zeit or Bavarian States Opera, these are clients which have a problem. The problem is the people like buying the tickets or the people buying the newspapers, they got older and older. And they really have to get like youth, like younger people buying it, younger people being interested in the opera. In the moment, Bavarian States Opera is always full. I mean, you don't get any tickets for years. But what about in like 15 years when all these people are dead? So at least at that time, when the younger generation gets older and has the money to buy some tickets, they at least have to find out that it's quite a cool place to go to. And what I really like is working with clients which have content. I mean, States Opera has a content, of course. It's music. You have the story play. A newspaper has always like new stuff to talk about. It's politics, economics, fashion. Things which makes it for an art director or for a graphic designer very interesting, because I mean the challenge you have every day is every day different in a way, you know, because the difficult part is it has to look like the same product because people like almost the same product. And that's, it really encourages me.
I want to ask you about that idea of then that sort of challenging that continuity, because you've had some works, and if we go, you know, not just on the printed page, but there's some, I know there was a sort of an installation you did at the State Opera, which was quite controversial here in Munich. Are you aware of the fact that you have a responsibility, I guess, for the clients and for their customers
to
maintain some continuity, but at the same time to mix things up? Is that exciting for you? Is that a challenge? Do you ever worry about that? I sense that it doesn't concern you.
I'm living from the success of my clients. That's definitely true, because once they lose money, I'm going to lose money too. I'm going to lose the job, because they're going to be really upset when people don't go to the opera anymore, or don't buy a Zeit or Zeit magazine, whatever we're doing at the moment. And I think that's the tricky part about it, like doing something, I wouldn't say edgy or like contemporary, I said something personal, because I think most of my work is very personal. Like a character thing, sometimes you like people, sometimes you don't like people, so I have to be the one guy a lot of people like, you know, the stuff I'm doing, like a lot of people have to like it and have to buy it. And if they don't, the client's going to kick me.
That's a pretty good place to be, I think. Let me just ask you about your sort of design style, because this speaks in a way to what you're just talking about in terms of being connected to the projects and the heart mm-hmm. of the projects. I know you've said before that if a designer has a signature style, it can be a problem, because then you're losing sight maybe of the focus on the project mm-hmm. and it becomes about something else. It becomes about the designer and what people expect to see. Do you worry that that is something that happens too often in graphic design, that people do lose sight of the project? They have to compromise because they're too focused on bringing their signature style to the table. Is that a widespread problem in your business, do you think?
No, but it's a problem, I think, somehow, because some people which think they have a certain style, most of them, they're super exaggerated and like all clients look the same. That's the one hand. On the other hand, it's like a lot of graphic designers think they're like authors. They're like artists. They want to go in a gallery. They want to go in a museum with their work. And I always say, like, you're like a plumber. You're the guy who's been called when the toilet's totally...
I've never heard anyone make this analogy before, Marco, but this is good. It's the first time on the
Yeah,
on the
it's a service, you know. You come there and you make things fine again for people and make the toilet beautiful again. And, you know, that's how I see my job somehow. And I really like working with my clients, because normally, like, I used to work 8-9 years in advertising agencies. It was like end of the 90s, beginning of 2000. So we always used to like start a presentation, work really hard on it, never talk to the client, because everybody said like the client is super stupid. Then we went to the client, we're like, look, this is the creation, look at it and how beautiful. And mostly the client said, yeah, no, we're not going to do it. Or we're going to do it that way, but not in red, in green, not with a girl, with a dog, not with a car, with a house. And it's a complete different idea. So what I tried to do is like, get the client very quickly involved into my project, into my thinking, show them my ideas, talking about the ideas and develop stuff together with them. So actually they never have a surprise. They never have this day where they open something and then they go like, ooh, that's super fantastic, weird, or that's super creative or super ugly, whatever. They have just the day where they say, okay, now it's almost finished. And, you Here know, next week you have to pay.
And the dialogue maker, that's at the heart of that. Just talking.
Is, yeah. face to face, talking, and not doing too many layouts in front. Because, you know, it depresses yourself. You know from yourself, if you would do like interviews the whole day and you would never release one of these, you get depressed after a while. Mm. And that's what happens in the creative industry as well. If you have so many ideas at one point and every time you can just bring one on front, and the other ones you have to all
Could
throw
be
away.
Soul destroying.
That's a pity. Yeah. But I mean, if you develop a really nice or two really nice ideas together with the clients, you know, they're going to happen and they're going to be beautiful and they're going to love it.
You talked a bit there about your experience in Adland going back to the kind of 90s. Let's mm-hmm. let's go a bit further back even than that. You mentioned sort of training in London. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you about that, and also about your sort of 80s. You were into graffiti art. That was very important for you.
Definitely.
Obviously, graffiti during that period, I guess into the 80s, it was kind of transitioning. It's been happening for longer than that.
Yeah.
From the sort of countercultural, from the streets, into the design lexicon for everybody. Why did it work for you? What was it about it that meant that was a medium that's clearly at that time spoke to you maybe more profoundly than some others?
Yeah, actually started with, because when I started graffiti, I thought like, that's the thing for me in my life. And I did it quite long. I did it until my 30s somehow. So quite long. But at one point I thought I have to study something. Yeah, I have to do something when I'm 40 or 50. So I thought about what can I do? And like friends of mine, they started doing art at that time, fine arts somewhere. And I didn't really dare, because I thought like, because fine arts that time and my graffiti things I was doing, like, because there was not a connection to like today, if you see it in galleries with street art and everything, it really developed and it rose big. So I started graphic design because at my time, computers were there already, but you still did sketches and drawings. So I actually came from the illustration and I wanted to do still some illustration. So I started in London, and at that time, advertising was still, like, it was beginning of the 90s. Advertising was still something. I mean, we thought it is something. There were a lot of young creative people in there and was a young creative industry. And what I always liked about the job, and what I still like about the job of being a graphic designer, if you do big jobs like the States Opera or Die Zeit, which we mentioned before. So if I enter a plane in Germany, they all get Die Zeit, obviously, for free if they ride with the Lufthansa. And so I'm sitting there and seeing all these people looking through my work. But I'm like this graffiti artist riding my train. Nobody really knows that I did the graffiti outside or the panel or whatever outside of the train. But I still get like how the people look at it and if people hate it or just throw it away or do the riddle in the back pages. So that's interesting for me.
We talked a bit about Die Zeit already and you mentioned it again then. How's your role with that paper changed? So you're the creative director and you work obviously with the chefredakteur, mm-hmm. Try a bit of German there. Has that changed? Has that evolved over the years? I mean, does it change now? Are you as hands-on as you always were? What's that relationship?
No,
like?
It changed a bit. It's like, because at the beginning I was just doing Die Zeit together with Heike Hinsen, and I did the art direction together with her for the first 3 years. After 2 years I started with the Zeit magazine because they had a hard time coming into the market. I did before for the Süddeutsche Zeitung, the magazine there, it's a Fridays magazine, so it's a supplement too. It's almost similar. So the chefredakteur, Giovanni Di Lorenzo, he thought it's maybe a good idea that I have an eye on that and work together with Christoph Amann, and I knew Christoph Amann from another magazine before. So it's make long things short. After 3 years, my bureau grew a lot bigger, and I couldn't go to Hamburg anymore, like every week, 3 days a week. That's what I did before, 3 years, and to Berlin as well. So what I'm doing now is I do most of the relaunches of the newspaper and working on bigger things in the newspaper and helping the art direction or the co-art director with some ideas, but mostly they work on their own and they do really, really nice work. And I'm super hands-on still on the Zeit magazine, on the weekly, because I have a lot more influence into that. Because if you do the Zeit magazine, we have like 1-2 weeks to develop the next issues, and we're always working 2-3 issues. And so every week I'm working on that 1-2 days. And then we have other projects like Kaleidoscope or Spike, still working on those. But there, the design we do actually in our studio.
What about the freedom that you've had working with Die Zeit? Did that ever surprise you that you had quite a lot of, you know, artistic, creative license, free reign to, you know, try new things? Again, going back to that point we were making earlier about some of these traditional models, did you ever stop and think, God, this is amazing that I'm doing this? Or did it always just feel very, very natural and intuitive?
Yeah, I really never thought about it at the beginning. I never thought about the amount of audience can reach with that kind of a tool, with that kind of a newspaper. I was just doing my work and, you know, but after a while, actually just 7 years later, it starts growing. The feeling starts growing that people actually read it and gonna consume it and have a reaction if I do something weird in the newspaper and, you know. But it doesn't really change anything on my ideas or on my side on the ideas. But at the beginning, same with States Opera or Die Zeit, everything started quite normal, and I started talking to my clients and the people I worked to and said, okay, but we can do more. I think we should be more special, and we're like, we should be a different product, different project. And Giovanni Lorenzo, Christoph Arment, or Nikolaus Bachler from the States Opera, they're good clients. They trust me and they work with me. It's not always that every idea I say they're going to make at the end, there's some things they obviously don't do. But, I mean, basically we're talking about everything, and I think that's very, very important, because most of the publisher houses, most of the magazines don't listen to the art directors anymore. I mean, it's different with Monocle, you know. It's beautifully designed. It's a really nice piece of art somehow. But you see, like, the influence of an art director within a magazine, and that's as well as the success of your story.
Does that worry you then, when we look across the whole industry, you know, that it's perhaps the exceptions where you can see that that's the case. You know, a great deal of thought has gone into the design, the art mm-hmm. direction, typography, the paper stock, every decision. The fact that you can mention, you know, the examples where that happens, it's not the standard maybe across the whole industry. Is that a worry? Does the fact that we're going increasingly digital across media, does that change that landscape as well? Or are you confident that good designers doing good work will always have a supportive environment in which they can thrive?
No, it definitely will change. I mean, that you see it in an advertising agency. I think there's too many people asked if red or blue is the right color for the logo. Because the intuition, like you had it in 50 years ago or 60 years ago, when big brands were super, super big, like Mercedes-Benz, Bosch, and all these brands are almost gone. Braun was a German big design brand. You really wouldn't notice that anymore if you see it now. But it's at the time when Dieter Rams did it, there were some people which did super clear decisions. And, you know, now it's like we are all amazed about Apple. But there's no difference in that. There's just one guy who decided, I want to have it beautifully, and it has to be easy, and it has to be a good product.
Do you think we can get back? Can we get back to that value set, or do you think it's changed?
I don't know.
It's changed indelibly.
I think a lot of magazines, like the small ones and the small print products, as yours is, as some of the products I'm doing. I think the only way you can do in the moment is having a beautifully done, very well written product. The trash
helps,
you can have
it?
All trash in internet. I mean, you can have like all this Sun Hello stuff you can have in the internet. It's much faster. Sports is much faster than the internet. Economics, politics too. But on the other hand, it's going to be. I mean, I'm still thinking about. I mean, most of the publisher houses are thinking about how to earn the money with the internet anyway. So until we don't solve that problem, when all the magazines ran down, internet maybe is down as well, you know, because who's going to pay?
Well, this is a question that no one seems to have an adequate answer for.
No, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, then we are back in Stone Age.
Yeah.
But at least we have still radio.
Exactly. Here we are, the warm embrace of radio. Mirko, when you're seeking inspiration, obviously you've said, well, or sort of implied already, the inspiration you draw from Munich, being here in beautiful Bavaria. Mm-hmm. Where else do you look? Is it when you're traveling? Is it people that you talk to, you stress the importance of face-to-face contact, that kind of thing? Where do you look to get that inspiration from?
I think it's a mixture of all. It's like a mixture of having a well-balanced, happy life. I think that's very important. And still having the eyes of a little kid, like running around, say, oh, this flower is really beautiful. You saw that idea somewhere here. Oh, look, that shadow looks weird. Or this cloud is funny. You know, like these things. Until you keep yourself in a permanent fun rush of ideas and you just don't be lazy about it. I think it's like sports, you know, because a lot of people say, like, I didn't have an idea. I can't develop anything on that. I was like, yeah, but you didn't think about it well. Mm-hmm. And it's not about just like this brainstorming idea we had in the 90s where you're like three or five middle ages sit in one room with a pen and now like with a smartphone and just Googling around and doodling stuff. And I said, maybe I have this idea. It sounds stupid, I know, but I have this and this idea. That's what brainstorming is about, just waste of time. Sitting down and working super hard on one idea, that's old-fashioned as well, because you don't have the time anymore to have like more than 5 minutes to think about something in one hold, because then the telephone rings, somebody says something to you, an email comes, or something else distracts you. So I think it's like a sportsman, you have to be trained on that and you have to be like always thinking, oh, that's a nice idea, that's a good idea. And of course, I look at everything. I really read a lot of books and newspapers. I'm not looking television at all. I watch like everybody, all the big shows on Netflix or HBO, wherever you look at. Because, I mean, you have to talk about society
the
stuff.
The dreaded water cooler moments.
Yeah.
So let's go full circle. We began by talking about the sort of design discourse in Germany. Let's look at Germany, big picture. This is a big socio-political question for you. It's been a relatively turbulent period. You think politically, there's lots of talk about migration across Europe and all this sort of thing. How do you feel about working in Germany right now? Is the country in a good place? What's going to happen over the next few months? Do you think that there's political upheaval ahead? Do you think that it's a good time to be living and working here, as you have done for many years? What's your reading of it?
Honestly, I think if it comes to inner politics, I'm not sure, because as you said with the immigrants, I think Germany did a lot of mistakes. We all know that. But if it comes to Munich, like in my hometown, I think Munich did it quite well because we had a lot of immigrants coming here. We didn't have any problems with Nazis, like no big Pegida demonstrations, stuff like that. And like the people starting helping, like they organized themselves. Everybody tried to organize themselves. I think I'm quite proud of that.
What about the role that, you know, people in the creative community play then? Do you think it's right that people have a voice and they express it, even if it's on a debate like that, something like migration, which is can be very politically sensitive? You feel like it's right that people in the creative businesses have their say and give their views?
I think definitely I should do. What we did with the Zeit and the Zeit magazine, we did I think 8 months ago already. Our first issue was half Arabic, half German. And all the texts were like translated in Arabic, so you could read it in both directions, because Arabic, obviously, you have to read the other way around. It was for the Syrian Einwanderer, like for the immigrants. And we had all the like cooking and like all the normal columns we normally have in that magazine. They were all translated for them. And the main piece was done by some immigrants which are already here for a few years, like I think 5 years, 6 years. And they started meeting these people, taking pictures together with them and talking about like how hard it was, like all this big thing, like losing family, war. And I think it was a good thing, you know, it's a good thing. A lot of readers, they weren't so keen on that. They weren't keen on how could you do an Arabic issue? You have to do something. And at least then like a few hundred thousand people see something is happening. And why is this Arabic? So then you read the text and you know something.
We've sort of reflected on a lot of the kind of different disciplines that you have dabbled in, you know, whether it's in print, with business clients, all sorts of different things. How do you see yourself? Because it's funny, you keep saying to me, oh, you know, I never wanted to be an artist, or, you know, being an artist is a bit risky, or fine art was very different. But, you know, you've had your work's been on display in galleries. You're an artist outwardly, but you definitely don't see yourself that way. How would you label yourself?
I don't know. I'm a that's really yeah. Nobody asked. I never asked me that.
It's good. It's good. We got around to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I really have to think about that now. I don't know. It's I'm trying to solve problems with creative ideas. That's what I do. It's not about the discipline. It's not about is it print or web or television or I don't know. I really love solving problems with creative ideas. And if it ends up in a museum at the end, it's cool. Because as we said, if it's in a museum, it must be important.
I would say that's a perfect note on which to end. You've been listening to The Big Interview with me, Tom Edwards, in conversation with Mirko Borsche. Mirko, thanks very much for being with us on the
program.
Thank
you very much.
The Big Interview is produced and edited by Bill Lutie in London and researched by Gaia Lutz. Special thanks to Uli and the team here at Atrium Studio in Munich as well. Subscribe to all of our Monocle 24 shows on iTunes, via SoundCloud, or of course at monocle.com. And until next time on The Big Interview, it's goodbye. Thanks for listening.